This is a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum. For further information, please go to www.rafmuseum.org/podcasts. Bomber Operations, the Peenemünde Raid. In November 1939, physicist Hans Ferdinand Mayer wrote a report on German weapons programs whilst on a business trip to Oslo. He mailed two separate documents to the British Embassy in Norway and asked the British authorities to signal their receipt of them by making a change to the BBC News broadcast announcement. So on November the 20th, the announcement, which was normally, "Hello, this is London calling," was subtly changed to, "Hello, here is London." When war had broken out, Mayer had resolved to provide the Allies with as much information as possible, and the resulting documents became known as the Oslo Report. The report was so rich and detailed that MI6 and senior military officials couldn't decide whether it was an attempt to misinform the Allies or the work of a genuine asset with sympathy for the Allies. Part of the report described the development of rockets at a research facility at Peenemünde on the Baltic coast of Germany. This, along with reconnaissance pictures and information from other intelligence sources, such as prisoners of war, provided planners in Bomber Command at High Wycombe and in the Air Ministry and the government with a clear target. Towards the end of the war, a long time after the Blitz, British cities were still feeling the very real dangers presented by enemy bombardment. Initially it was the V1, nicknamed the Doodlebug by the British public, that caused the terror. The V1, or Fiesler Fi-103, was the first operational cruise missile. It became well known because of the distinctive sound of its engines, which would cut out as a result of its final dive towards the target. On the 13th of June 1944, just a week after D-Day, the first V-1 was fired at Britain. In the following 9 months, more than 10,000 V-1 bombs were fired at targets in Britain, causing about 6,000 casualties. The Doodlebug gave the Nazis a way to counteract superior Allied defences with relatively low-risk weapons which caused massive damage and many casualties. This is now known as asymmetric warfare, a destructive theme that became a factor in most conflicts after World War II and which dominates international conflict even to this day, as it has been used by terrorists to inflict high numbers of casualties. After launch, the V-1 flew a straight course to its target, which made it easier to locate, but it was fast and therefore difficult to shoot down, except by the Hawker Tempest and the first jet in RAF service, the Gloucester Meteor. Even the Tempest needed to make a diving attack on the V-1, which would be travelling at between 350 and 400 miles per hour by the time it reached Britain. At this stage, the missile was relatively light because it had consumed most of its fuel. The V-1 was succeeded by the V-2, a very different type of weapon, which was almost impossible to shoot down. The V-2 flew at supersonic speeds at high altitude and was very accurate. Between the end of the V-1 campaign on September 8, 1944 and March 1945, 1,403 V-2s were fired at London and other British cities, including Norwich and Ipswich. V-2s were also fired at cities in Europe. Antwerp was used as the main port for resupplying the Allies as they reclaimed Europe. A V-2 attack there killed 567 people when a cinema was hit. The information in the Oslo report was gradually augmented by reconnaissance information, which confirmed the importance of the Peenemünde site. Both missiles had been produced in sufficient numbers so that they would continue to be used after successful completion of the raid, but destroying the facilities at Peenemünde and killing the experts behind the V-weapons meant that further development would be slowed or halted. Once the raid was ordered, the planning process began with selection of an appropriate time. Tuesday, the 17th of August 1943 was selected as the best date for the raid. The plan was to mount the attack during the period of long moonlit nights when Bomber Command wasn't normally able to concentrate on Germany. The weather over the target had to be favourable, with no cloud obscuring the aids to navigation provided by the islands off the Baltic coast. Choosing a weekday period increased the chances that top scientists would be killed in the attack. Also, it was known that the entire United States Army Air Force, every B-17 Flying Fortress and B-24 Liberator in Great Britain, would, on that day, have attacked the Messerschmitt factory at Regensburg. Some of that force would continue to North Africa and some would return to the United Kingdom. These American raids were a helpful coincidence for Bomber Command. The returning force would draw some Luftwaffe attacks and the Luftwaffe was likely to have suffered from being in action defending Regensburg that day. In another tactical move, a diversionary attack on Berlin would further divide defensive operations in an attempt to defend Peenemünde. In the briefings, bomber crews were not told the nature of the target they were attacking. Instead, they were told that a new radar system that would pose a threat to RAF bombers was in development at Peenemünde. This was to encourage their best efforts and to ensure that any aircrew that got taken prisoner couldn't pass on details of the extent of Allied knowledge of the Peenemünde rocket research. One particularly difficult part of the briefing for this mission was the deliberate targeting of housing, but the crews were told that high-level officials would be at the location and were being specifically targeted. The crews were also told that if the raid failed, it would be reattempted until it was successful. This instruction came from Sir Arthur Harris, the Commander-in-Chief of Bomber Command. To confuse the enemy, a diversionary mosquito attack on Berlin was scheduled for the same night. The Luftwaffe had pioneered a defensive system which divided their territory into overlapping boxes 35 miles across, each with its own radar group and controller. Night fighters, whose sole function was to shoot down RAF bombers, were sent against targets as they were detected on radar. Another weapon which the Luftwaffe used was a gun vertically mounted in the fuselage of a Bf 110. This was called Schrager music, meaning slanting music or jazz music. The fighter would approach its target from below and shoot upwards at it. RAF bombers countered the German radar with window, strips of metal which would show up in large numbers on the radar. Fighter Command was also able to launch fighters with sufficient range to reach the night fighter bases and shoot the aircraft down before the bombers came under attack. The Germans were convinced that the Peenemünde raid was a large-scale assault on Berlin, which they were expecting, and the small diversionary raid would have added to the confusion. They were, of course, not aware of the intelligence that the Allies had about the work that went on at Peenemünde. Nevertheless, the raid encountered resistance over Denmark, and one bomber was lost after being caught in searchlights near Flensburg, and another met a similar end near Sylt. The pathfinders had some difficulty marking the targets, with wind causing the coloured phosphor markers to blow off course. The master bomber, Group Captain John Searby, updated crews as they went in, telling them if a marker was inaccurately placed and should therefore be disregarded. The raid called for more precision than a normal area bombardment, so the drift caused accuracy problems which wouldn't normally be a factor in bomber operations. The surprise nature of the raid on a target that was supposed to be a secret and the diversionary attack on Berlin kept the German fighters away from Peenemünde for most of the time, but by the time the bombing raid was coming to an end, the fighters began to arrive. The final wave of bombers was making its run on the target when the night fighters arrived in the area. The conditions which made the attack favourable for bombers now caused them the greatest trouble. Night fighter pilots could see clearly in the moonlight, with the fires below further illuminating the sky full of bombers. These conditions led to some ferocious fighting as gunners took on the fighters, which accounted for almost all of the Bomber Command losses that night. 41 bombers were lost out of the 596 which took part in the raid. Unfortunately, there were a large number of civilian casualties, and some of those killed were forced labourers, themselves prisoners of war. Group Captain John Searby was awarded the Distinguished Service Order for his role as Master Bomber on the raid. He continued to serve in the Royal Air Force after the war, attaining the rank of Air Commodore. He died in 1986. The existence of the Oslo Report was not made public until 1947, and the identity of its author was not revealed until 1989. Hans Ferdinand Meyer died in 1980. Many of the scientists who worked on the rocket development programme at Peenemünde were evacuated to the American zone as the war drew to a close. Werner von Braun, the director of the facility, ended up working for NASA in the United States on the development of the Saturn rockets that sent people to the moon. He died in 1977. Examples of the V-1 and V-2 weapons can be seen at the museum's London and Cosford sites. The London site's Battle of Britain Hall has an exhibition on the use of these weapons on targets in Britain, as well as an extensive collection of Allied and Axis aircraft. The Cosford site is home to the museum's missile collection. The Peenemünde raid is often overlooked when the work of Bomber Command is discussed by modern commentators. The Dams raid is the most famous of bomber raids, and controversy continues to surround much of the history of Bomber Command. Whilst the Dams raid was an enormous boost to Allied morale, and the most controversial examples of area bombing aimed to destroy manufacturing industry and cripple the Third Reich, the raid against the V-1 and V-2 development infrastructure set back the Nazis' ability to use missile technology against the Allies in the closing months of the Second World War. The raid is considered to have been a great success, and yet 131 men gave their lives to achieve that success, and 14 were taken prisoner of war. 41 aircraft were lost. In hindsight, from the point of view of what is acceptable today, that seems like a terrible loss of life, and so it is. However, the loss of life from further months of bombardment from V-2 rockets would probably have been far higher. This is the sort of campaign that Bomber Command fought almost every day of the war, and its cumulative effect was an onslaught which ultimately slowed down the Nazi war-waging infrastructure, and with the Allied advance from the west and east, brought about the eventual surrender of Germany and Allied victory.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.